We go into hour number three. Welcome to the program. Welcome back. Welcome to the show. Good morning. Good afternoon. Wherever you might be, I am in fact live, and I'm in Southern California. We are in the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. All right, so we kind of veered off the road a little bit in a good way on this Thursday. Nice to have you here. Coming up at 40 past, a conversation with the Washington football team quarterback, Taylor Heinicke. We already had a conversation with Ravens fullback, Pat Ricard. Right now, we talk Illinois basketball. If you're on hold, stay there. We're talking Illinois basketball. We are joined by the head coach there. He is in his fourth season at Illinois. Led Illinois to the largest turnaround among schools from the six major conferences last season. Led Illinois to a top 25 finish last season for the first time since 2006. Illinois is 15-5. They are number five in both polls. They're at Minnesota on Saturday. Brad Underwood is their head coach. Brad, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be back, Jim.
Good to have you back, Brad. Thanks for the time. All right, so you beat Northwestern on Tuesday night. Let me start right there because that's a game where you got off to a great start, then you had some foul trouble, but you still managed to find a way to get it done. What did you make of how your guys dealt with their attempts, Northwestern's, to get back into that game and the way they finished the game?
Well, it had an NCAA tournament feel from this standpoint. It was a night that we didn't shoot the ball particularly well. We dealt with adversity. We had Kofi played four and a half minutes the first half. They got a couple early fouls for the first time in a long time. And our bench guys stepped up huge. And we maintained a nice lead and give Northwestern credit. Chris does a great job, and his kids fought, and they made some shots. And you've got to find a way to win games when you're not at your best. And we weren't at our best. And Northwestern had something to do with that, but those games happen in postseason, and I told our kids afterwards I was proud of them because everything's not going to go smooth in postseason play, and you got to grind one out, and that's what we did.
Illinois head coach Brad Underwood is joining us. You mentioned Kofi Cockburn, 17-10, which is pretty much right on his season average. You knew the potential he had when he first arrived on campus, but what does it mean to you to see the level that he has taken his game to?
Well, he's become really consistent. And that's the one thing that he was not last year. He had some big games, he had some big moments, but then he had some, he'd go two or three games where he wasn't at his best. And now he's turned into a dominant force on both ends of the court, really every night out. And he's moved up the scouting report of opponents. He's at the top. People are trying to double team him, triple him, whatever they have to do. He's handled that with great maturity and he's a more confident kid. The old saying, the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores, is very true in his case. And he's in better shape. He's physically just very strong. And he's having a very, very, very solid sophomore year.
You know that thing, too. Like, the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores. And the other old saying is you can't teach size. He's got plenty of that. It seems like from the outside, he's also got, like, a huge desire to put in the time, to put in the work. He wants to be great. He's willing to listen and learn. I mean, is that the case with him? And can you teach that sort of thing?
No, he was brought up that way. And he's a young man that started basketball so late, and he's a sponge. He just wants to absorb information. And he wants to be challenged. There's not many kids in today's world that, coach, if I'm not playing hard, take me out and run me. He goes, I got to get it ingrained that I've got to go hard all the time. My motor's got to be high. He's a guy that constantly is in your ear about, okay, what I do on that play. He just wants to learn, and to his credit, he's a very quick learner. It's really a joy to work with somebody like that.
When talking to Brad Underwood, Brad, if we were to go back to last season, there was a stretch in early February where you dropped four straight, but then you bounced back to win five of the last six, including win over number nine Penn State. Assistant coach Stephen Gentry told ESPN that he did a deep dive on the offensive end afterwards. I'm curious, what did you and he learn from that, and did that carry over to this season?
Well, I think we had to figure out how to utilize really good guards along with Kofi and make sure that we had the right balance. And Kofi's number one in the country in usage and ball screens. And yet you've got a guy that is a National Player of the Year candidate in IO. Finding that balance, not being in positions to turn the ball over. We knew we had some different personnel this year than last year, and so it was making the adjustments. It's advanced analytics. It was putting all of that together with a system that we thought would best fit this group. And Steven's a very creative mind, so it's been something that's been very positive, and we've got a nice balance of kind of a continuity motion, and then we've got a lot of ball screen action.
Brad Underwood's my guest. Now, you and I have talked about Iowa in the past. One of the things that jumps out to me about his game is that he seems like he's always in the right spot at the right time. The way he describes it, quote, "I'm a winner, and I look for the win at the end of the day. My closing instincts just took over. Some nights I don't have to score 30 for us to get the win," end of quote. So how different is he now from when you and I last spoke about him, and what makes him so unique?
Yeah, I think when you talk about Iowa, it's the winner things. It's not just a capital W; it's the whole word. And he does whatever it takes. He's much more patient this year. There's a maturity about him being an upperclassman, being a junior. He's seen it all. He's seen every defense. He's seen every coverage. And there's a confidence that comes with that. He's an exceptional worker. And the one thing that translates with that is confidence. So you put confidence to go with experience, and now you've got a guy that, you know, feels like he doesn't have to go score 30. He can get his teammates involved. And yet, you know, a couple of games ago on the road at Nebraska, you know, last 4 minutes, and he goes, "I've got this." And he had it. I mean, he scored 14 straight and made a couple of passes that led to other baskets right after that. So, you know, he's a guy that's had a triple-double this year, the third one in our school's history. You know, he can do everything to help win, and he is the ultimate definition of a winner.
So that confidence you speak of, I mean, does he show up and he just had that already, or does he have that confidence because of what you just said? He's an exceptional worker.
Both. I mean, he's always been a very confident young guy in his ability, and I think the one thing that happened, you know, you get rocked. You know, you come to college as a freshman, and everybody tells these kids today they're one and done, they're this or that. Well, all of a sudden you get to college and you find out it's really hard. And he got rocked. But he is such a high-character kid, that didn't faze him. That just said, okay, I've got things to work on. And he goes and puts that time in. And with that now, those aren't weaknesses anymore. Or those, you know, he's added 30 pounds. He's added, you know, 8 inches to his vertical jump or 9 inches. He's added, you know, he couldn't bench 185 when he got here. Now he does it 18 times. All that comes with confidence and hard work. And that combination of having dealt with some bumps in the road gives him that confidence that, hey, I've put in the time. I know what's coming.
We're talking to Illinois head basketball coach Brad Underwood. You know, Brad, you guys are among the leaders in adjusted offensive efficiency and three-point shooting. I'm curious, what's to say about the coaching staff and the players that you could take such an enormous step this season and do so in the middle of a pandemic? How did you do that?
Well, I think it's good players, you know, and I think it's finding the right group, you know, that they're committed. I think I've always got the saying, we take character over characters. So I think it reflects on the character of our locker room. The guys that are in there, we've become old in terms of old, you know, not a young team anymore. Last year we were really young. We are starting a freshman this year, but we're still a team that is more mature, has a lot of experience. So those guys were able to pick up. They understand. When we made the adjustments and tweaks, they knew exactly what we were trying to do and why. And then they work. So, you know, that combination has been pretty doggone good for us.
So finally, where does that leave you now? For instance, it's a program with so much history and so much tradition, but it did have some struggles in recent years. You and I have talked since you arrived. What was the vision that you had for the program when you first got there, and how close are you to realizing that vision now?
Yeah, I'm really proud of that, Jim. When I took over, the Associated Press, I think, named it the 11th ranked program in the history of college basketball. And for whatever reason, there could be a million of them, the program had suffered. We went to the 2005 Final Four. And to me, we've just now got this back to where it belongs. And we've got great fan base. We've got 15,500 every night in a non-pandemic year. Passionate basketball fans and a university where it's important. And, you know, I'm excited that we've gotten the level of basketball back to where I think it should be. you know, each and every year. And I know there's off years, and I know there's great years, but this is a great program, and I'm excited to get this thing back to where it, in my opinion, it should be.
Illinois, 15-5. They're number 5 in both polls. Number 5 in both polls, and they've got a big one coming up against Minnesota on Saturday. Their head coach is Brad Underwood. Brad, always good to have you on the show. Great to get caught up. Appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much. Good luck. We'll do it again soon.
Look forward to it, Jim. Thank you.
You too, Brad. Thank you. Brad Underwood has done an amazing job there. Top 5. And that's the first time they've been in that position since 2005.
You know my answer.
Wow, Ritt. Or as I like to say, damn, Ritt. Damn, Ritt. Stop pushing buttons. Things like that don't happen if you don't push buttons. Listen, it's hard. I mean, I'm asking Ritt to do something that, frankly, is way beyond his reach. He can barely do the job he's supposed to do. So how is he going to do Alvin's job? I know that's hard. So I'm gonna breathe through it and take it easy on you, Ritt. It really isn't your fault. You're doing essentially what you're asked to do to the best of your ability. It's Thursday, y'all. All right, so I've got an open segment coming up next. In the meantime, as I mentioned, we kind of veered off the path a little bit. And I don't know that I've ever seen a thread that has nothing to do with anything run through an entire program the way the VHS or movie rental store is. Because they just keep coming. Everybody's got an angle. Jim, when I was 17, I worked at a place called Photo Drive-Up in San Jose, California. One side of the business, well, this is so good and so true. One side of the business was film developing and the other side was movie rentals. This was Blockbuster before, or this was before Blockbuster in Hollywood Video. I was a cashier and rented VHS and Betamax movies from 4 p.m. to 1 a.m. every Friday and Saturday night. I remember we had at least 100 copies of Commando and Red Dawn. People would wait by the return counter, sometimes for hours, for the new releases to come back. I made $3.35 an hour. I never rewound them tapes in the machine. Fun times. Scott and Boise. Scott, you know what's amazing about that? That's amazing that you mentioned $3.35 an hour. I remember making the same amount of money. I remember when minimum wage was $3.35. When I was at In-N-Out, that's what I made, $3.35 an hour. And I remember one of the reasons I got the job at In-N-Out was because it was a privately owned company. It was a family-owned business, and we were led to believe that they paid a lot more than normal fast food, and they did. I remember there were people at In-N-Out when I made $3.35 that were making $5.50 an hour. And I'm like, damn, how does she make that much money? And that same aforementioned Dave Meadows would be like, snagger, you know how? She's good at her job. You're not. I'm like, really, boss? What is she hitting this year in your softball league? That's what I thought. Can I get a raise? He's like, you want to keep your job? Yes. Keep your mouth shut and go back to work. $3.35, that's so funny you mentioned that. That's what I made. That was minimum wage. What's minimum wage right now, by the way? Isn't it $15 an hour? Rome, nothing worse than having the store call your house and get your father only to tell him that the video game you rented without him knowing was overdue. And then having to go to the store so he could yell at the manager about the late fee. War watching your dad... We're watching your dad hop the counter to remove the fee himself. This thread is incredible. Eric and Gilbert, Jimmo, we all had that rich friend whose family had a dedicated machine just for rewinding VHS movies. Beauregard was that kid. Chris in Milwaukee, another absolutely awesome angle. The machine that was dedicated just for rewinding tape. That's true. There was always that one rich family that had that. Rome Slice. We agree. You had to work for that porno. Regards, attaching a wire hanger and tin foil to your TV while watching the scrambled Spice Channel. These all work. Rome, I worked in a video store, but instead of the movies being in boxes and aisles, the covers were numbered inside binders that people could flip through. The creepiest ones were the dudes with a checklist of which porn they had already rented. Unwore red VHS tapes, Francis and Glendale. Man, I remember that too. Remember the binders? Remember the creeps with the checklist of the porno they had already seen? This is incredible. This thread will not die. Hey, Rome. Everybody knew that one guy that dubbed VHS cassettes. But don't forget mixtape cassette guy waiting for that top jam to play on the radio so he can release the pause button and record. JP in Riverside. War yelling, stop! For the ice cream man, and then hitting the truck with water balloons. Dude, stick to the thread. Don't get off thread. Man, remember the Sony Walkman? That was some technology. Remember when they came out with the one that played both sides of the cassette? That was amazing. I can remember jogging around the block with my Walkman. Yeah, you know what that ice cream truck was about, don't you? You know why that music was so loud, don't you? I'm not saying. Bomb pops, yo. Just bomb pops. All right, I'm going to try and get this thing back on track. I really should. Hey, Rome, renting VHS tapes was a breeze. Signed my parents, who rented 40-pound VHS players in a plastic suitcase once a month. Dustin Rath. Hey, Dustin, if I sent that in, I would have gone with my full government. That's a great take. Remember renting VHS players and them coming in that giant suitcase? And why would you rent a VHS player? So you can watch rented movies in your home. Because like, hey, why go to the movie theater when we can do it at home? Did you rent Raisinettes too? Romy, all these clones claiming that the Tatis contract is too long clearly have never waited in line for hours at Denny's for a Grand Slam breakfast. Sign fat people. Man, we are so far gone right now. All right, I'm going to take a break.
Fat!
Damn, Rit. I need to reset this. Damn badly. Hey, Rome. Rit is your Uncle Rico telling the same overly loud joke at every family gathering and asking intrusive, overly personal questions in front of your elderly relatives. Thursdays are like being an out-of-market Laker fan. Showing up for one game, you get to see that year only to find out LeBron is sitting out that night. Rit is the guy who thinks that he could be in the band because he watched the Rolling Stones on TV. John O. in Boise. Nailed it.
Bring it on.
All right, then. Why don't we take a short timeout? Man, I need a long timeout personally, but I know it's going to be a short timeout. We'll come back, and then I'll have a normal segment, and then an excellent interview with Taylor Heineke. That's how the rest of the show sets up. Man, even the Friday version couldn't top this. There's no way tomorrow's better than today. Stay with it. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Taylor Heineke coming up in the last segment. That's 40 past. So an open segment next.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Taylor Heineke's coming up next segment. So we're talking about the quarterback carousel in the NFL. Carson Wentz on his way to Indianapolis. And I mentioned, in case you missed that, what a great deal for him, what a great deal for them. But especially what a great deal for them. Not a great deal for Philadelphia. They didn't get what they wanted. And certainly not a great deal for Chicago. They get nothing. They get shut out. He obviously wanted nothing to do with them. And if you're a quarterback, why would you? Speaking of quarterbacks, wouldn't you think that in an offseason that could have big-name quarterbacks on the move, that the one guy who'd be safe would be Ben Roethlisberger? I mean, come on, the guy's been there forever. Forever. I'm pretty sure that he backed up Terry Bradshaw at one point. Don't quote me on this, but I think that I definitely remember him throwing passes to John Stallworth and Lynn Swann and handing it off to Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer. Like, do you even remember a time when the Steelers did not have Ben Roethlisberger? It's almost impossible. But from the sounds of it, that time might be coming pretty soon. GM Kevin Colbert had lots of thoughts about that. Quote, "As we sit here today, Ben is a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers," end quote. Uh-oh! Talk about not committing. As we sit here today, Ben is a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers? When was the last time you heard something like that? Yeah, I know. In fact, it sounded exactly like that when the Rams were talking about Jared Goff. And the next thing you knew, he was on a plane to Detroit. As we sit here today, Ben is a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, what about tomorrow, Kevin? Let's not get into that just yet. As we sit here today. Yeah, as we sit here today, Ben is a member of the Steelers. As we sit here today, water is wet. As we sit here today, the sun rose. As we sit here today, the sky is still blue. It's about the most damning update that you're ever going to hear a GM make about a player, especially a Hall of Fame player, especially a player who's done for that team what Roethlisberger has done for that team. I mean, pretty wild to hear that, actually. As we sit here today, Ben is a member of the Steelers. Right. As we sit here today, Ben is a member of the human race. As we sit here today, Ben plays the sport of football in the city of Pittsburgh. At least he has in the past. As we sit here today, Ben has two arms and two legs and a big fat head. Pretty clear the GM is not going to commit to any more than today. The thing is, today, Roethlisberger is 39 years old. Today, his contract calls for a $41.2 million cap hit this coming season. This is why the GM is talking about the immediate present and not making any guarantees beyond that when it comes to Ben. And that first statement was not the only one of his nature. He also dropped this one.
You know, Ben Roethlisberger is on the team.
Wow. Ben Roethlisberger is on the team.
You know, Ben Roethlisberger is on the team.
You know, Ben Roethlisberger is a football player, didn't want any of that.
Yeah, as we sit here today, Ben is a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You ever heard a guy hedge harder or qualify harder? He is on the team.
You know, Ben Roethlisberger is on the team.
And that's not all. He had more.
Ben Roethlisberger did a lot of really good things last year, and we anticipate that he could still do some good things moving forward.
You know what I'm not hearing? I'm hearing a lot, but you know what I'm not hearing? I'm not hearing Ben is our guy. Ben has earned the right to play here as long as Ben wants. I'm not hearing that. I'll tell you what I'm hearing more of. I'm practically hearing the GM say, take a pay cut or hit the bricks. I'm practically hearing Ben Roethlisberger is on the team today and he'll be on the Bears tomorrow. I mean, listen, this is a brutal business in that regard. We're talking about Ben Roethlisberger. He's been with the Steelers since 2004. It's like a billion years in football. He's won two Super Bowls. Wouldn't you think that if anybody could guarantee that they could go out on their own terms, it would be that guy? But even he can't. This is why I'm always saying that every player should get as much money as they can when they can, because it doesn't matter how good you are, who you are, the end is going to come at some point. And when it does, it can be really ugly, no matter how many rings you have. Even Ben Roethlisberger cannot decide or get to decide when it ends and how it ends with the Steelers. And the GM wants to make that very clear, because the next thing the GM says is going to be something like, hey, Ben, here's the deal. We'll keep you, but you play for free. And if you continue to dink and dunk and average 2 yards per completion, your ass will be in the streets so fast it'll make your head spin. How's that sound, big dog? I'll tell you how it sounds to me, personally. It sounds to me like this does not end well. And it almost never does. 1-800-636. How about that? A straight take. Straight sports. How's that grab you? When we return, and not only this, I'm still on the clock. I'm not out late. How's that grab you? When we come back, quarterback for the Washington football team, a sensation, Taylor Heinicke. That's coming up next. Quick reminder, I've got episode 163 of the Jim Rome Podcast live, dropped yesterday. Kenny Anderson, hoops icon. My guy Kenny and I got caught up. That was a blast. So take that for a spin if you don't mind. Ep 163, and here is your sport. Wild day. We did not take one phone call. Not yet. Not yet. And it's been a good day. We had Pat Ricard, a fullback slash player for the Ravens. Great story. Illinois head basketball coach Brad Underwood made it back in. Illinois' top five in both polls. Taylor Heinicke is going to join me at some point this segment. We are efforting him. So, no, I've not taken a telephone call, but I would mix one in for the right call. So let me hit you with that number right quick, 1-800-636-8686, toll free. I mentioned Kenny Anderson. I mentioned that because Kenny and I go way back. Like when I first came up, and we talk about this on the podcast, when I first came up, he was first coming up, and I've got, as long as we're running through this nostalgic thread about the video rentals, you can imagine if that's fun. And it is fun, and you can all relate to it. When I first came up in the business, I remember those early days vividly and how much fun they were and what it meant. And I can remember having a TV show for the first time and the interviews that I would do. So of all the interviews I've done over the years, some of the ones that resonate with me the most, believe it or not, were the long-form interviews that I did on Talk 2 on ESPN2. And my producer on that show was Mark Shapiro. And Mark Shapiro would do a lot of the research for those interviews. And we would get together and we'd talk about how do we want to approach this? What do we want to do? And the reason these interviews would resonate with me so greatly, they were not 7-minute radio interviews. When I first got my first TV gig, it was on live television for 1 hour, 5 nights a week. So I would sit with guests for the better part of 40 minutes. We would do 40-minute interviews every single night. So you can imagine how it would resonate. How I remember those interviews, because they were in person, and not only would I sit with somebody for 40 minutes, but I mean, you'd sit with them during the commercial breaks, you'd maybe sometimes talk before the interview, like I was connecting with a lot of these guys, and then sometimes not connecting with them at all, depending on the guest. Kenny Anderson was one of those guys in all his glory, a playground legend, a legend from Queens, legendary college baller at Georgia Tech for a couple of years. And then a guy went second overall in the NBA draft. So Kenny was one of the guys that I used to interview back in the day when we both came up. So you can imagine at this point in our lives, when we come together now and haven't spoken in a minute or so, it's a blast. It's a good time. Really good time. So check that out. That's episode 163. And then on top of that, he's been through some things now, Kenny, both on and off the court. And it's got a beautiful attitude. So that is live. As promised, we're joined right now by a quarterback for the Washington football team. More than 350 yards from scrimmage and a couple of TDs in the playoffs against Tampa Bay, you recall? He signed a 2-year contract with Washington last week. He has spent time with Minnesota, New England, Houston, Carolina, as well as the St. Louis Battlehawks. Played his college ball at Old Dominion. He was undrafted in 2015. Taylor Heinicke is my guest. Taylor, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Man, I'm great. And I'm anxious to talk to you first. Let me rephrase that question. You re-signed with Washington last week. So how are you doing and how is your life right about now?
It's definitely different. I've talked to many people about the past 5 years of my journey, and I've always felt like I've had one foot in, one foot out, kind of just battling my way in, trying to just stay in the league. And now it kind of feels like I'm finally have my two feet in. A little bit of sense of security there. 2 year contract. So it feels good. All the hard work's paying off, and hopefully this is just the beginning.
It truly is an amazing journey. For instance, if we were to go back to December, as recently as December, you were back at Old Dominion, you were taking math classes after being out of the league since 2019. The story, Taylor, goes that you were taking mathematics in nature, number theory, discrete mathematics, applied numerical methods, and partial differential equations, and whatever any of that means. What was your life like at that point?
Yeah, from the summer until December, I was trying to figure out what plan B was. I kind of gave myself that time frame where if I didn't get a call this year, it was time to hang them up and move forward and find the next thing to do. So, I kept on training every day, and with the slight glimmer of hope in the back of my mind that, an injury may happen or something COVID-related might happen. And, sure enough, here we are. And if someone told me this is going to be the deal in January and February, 3-4 months ago, I would have took it all day. So again, a lot of good things happening here, but again, hopefully it's just the beginning.
Taylor Heinicke is joining us. All right. So what about that moment? Washington signs you to the practice squad on December 8th. What do you remember about that moment? What were you thinking then?
Yeah, I was actually in bed watching a movie, and, I remember my agent called me, and the first thing he says is, you ready to play some football again? And, I was pumped up. I found out it was Washington. And, the main reason they brought me in, as many of you remember, is when Denver had that COVID-related problem where they had a receiver play quarterback. Well, Washington was thinking about that situation and thought I would be the good quarantine quarterback. So I was up there in practice squad, kind of, had to keep my distance away from everybody. I was, sitting in the back of team meeting rooms and staying 10 yards away from everyone at practice. So it was a bit different, but with some things that happened here and there, I was thrust into the active spot and playing in the playoff game. So a lot of things were moving fast, a lot of things happened pretty quickly there, but again, I wouldn't have it any other way.
They made it very clear to you. In fact, Ron Rivera, who you had already played for, said, hey, you stay away from everybody. We cannot afford to have another issue. You need to stay away from everybody. And then you get the opportunity, and then all of a sudden you find yourself getting ready for that playoff game against Tampa Bay. You saw some action against the Panthers, and then you get the word that you're going to start a playoff game. And it was clear throughout that game you were ready. You were prepared. How do you explain that? How were you so ready for that big moment in the big stage?
Well, when I wasn't in, I kept on envisioning myself having success, and I think that had a big thing to do with it. I kind of envisioned myself in scenarios like that and being successful. So when that time came, I felt like I was ready for it. And again, I was with Scott Turner in Minnesota. I was with him in Carolina. So learning the playbook wasn't difficult for me. It was something I was already accustomed to. I kind of already knew the offense pretty well, which is a big thing at this level. So when I came in, I kind of took off where I left with that offense and didn't miss a beat. So again, the biggest thing for me in those 3 to 4 weeks was just trying to get the timing with the receivers. Obviously they've gone through a long, hard season. They were tired, so I didn't get any full speed reps. So for instance, the first time I was throwing to Terry McLaurin was in that game. So I thought we did pretty well, though, and again, something to build off of for next year.
That's amazing when you say that, because I was going to read you a quote from him. And what Terry said after the game was, quote, I take number 4 on my team any day of the week and twice on Sundays. I hope that we can be teammates in the future. The dude plays with no fear. To have a guy like that say something like that about you is one thing, but to have that guy say something like that about you when that was the first time that you had thrown to him in a game is absolutely amazing. What's it mean to you to hear that from him and to get that level of respect from your peers and teammates?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Coming into a new locker room, you just want to gain respect. And I remember the first day I got there, I said, I want to be the first one in, the last one out. And
I think when people walk into the locker room early in the morning, they see, you know, their quarterbacks and they're studying and trying to get ready. I think that means a lot to them. And, you know, again, yeah, I had a great relationship with Chase there. And again, it all goes back to preparation and showing those guys that, you know, you care. And so, you know, it worked out really well. I think they really respect my work ethic, my preparation. And again, it's a good thing to build off for next year.
And then, Taylor, there was that now famous dive for the end zone in the third quarter that left you with that sprained AC joint. What do you remember about that play?
Yeah, so you go back and look at the play, and I probably could have just thrown it to my first read and the running back in the flat. But I guess, you know, for some reason I didn't, and I kept on going through my reads, and they had it covered pretty well. I just remember, you know, the defensive line was actually doing a good job of keeping me in the pocket there for a little bit. And I kind of squirmed around, saw a little hole, took it off. And, you know, once I saw that pylon, I kind of just took a beeline for it and, didn't necessarily know I, you know, leaped from the 4 yard line to get there. But, looking back at it, it was a pretty cool play. Probably will say it's, might not ever happen again. But it was a cool deal.
Hey, listen, I'm not doing what I do. I'm not supposed to like fawn over the guys I talk to, but it was an amazing play. It was an absolutely amazing play to see, you know, even get off the couch after that kind of a play. But then you look at your story and it almost feels like something out of a Hollywood movie. But there are some other crazy, crazy things. Like there was that time at Old Dominion where you threw for 730 yards in a game and 5 TDs against UNH. I just want to make sure that I'm clear on this. That was in an actual football game, right? Not a video game. 730 yards passing. That happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was my sophomore year. It was our first game in conference. And, you know, it was a good conference in the FCS level, that CAA. You know, you got JMU, you got Delaware, you got all those guys. So New Hampshire came into town. They jumped up on us quick pretty early. They were up 24 points in the first quarter. And I remember the our offensive coordinator, Coach Scott, comes up and says, we're going to throw the ball every play and try and win this game. I was like, okay. Well, you know, 79 passes later, you know, I'm right there at 730 yards, and we come back and win the game 64-61. So that was really the beginning of it all. And, you know, just Coach Scott, you know, believing in me to throw the ball 79 times in the game, you know, it really kicked everything off.
Dude, how did your arm feel the next day? Were you hanging? Like, what's that like?
You know, it wasn't because I was feeling good, you know. But, you know, if we didn't win the game, it definitely would have been hurting a little bit more. But, again, you know, when you throw 730 yards and come back from a 24-point deficit, you know, you feel pretty good about it.
So before I let you go, just to circle back, knowing everything you've been through and the journey you've been on and what you've gone through even since college, what does it mean to you to sign that extension?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, it's everything that you work for as a kid. You know, I dreamed of playing in the NFL. I grew up watching guys like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. You know, I was born a Packer fan, so I like to think that when I'm out there, I just try and have fun, just like Brett Favre was out there doing. You know, leaving it all on the line every game, just going out there and trying to win games. So, you know, for this to happen. And just 4 months ago, I was taking classes, not thinking I'd ever play again. It's definitely a blessing, and again, I hope it's just the beginning of this wild ride.
So, I mean, Taylor, clearly you belonged out there. The moment was not too big for you, and you were in there trading shots with Tom Brady coming down. Like, if you grew up watching Brett Favre, admiring Brett Favre and guys like that and Aaron Rodgers, was there any part of you at any moment during that game where you're like, damn, I mean, I literally am standing in and trading blow for blow with the alleged GOAT?
No. Again, you know, a lot of people have asked me that, and you know, it's kind of cliche to say that, you know, I'm not playing Tom, I'm playing the defense. But again, the whole game, I'm like, this might be my last chance. This might be my last opportunity to play some ball. I'm gonna go out there and have some fun and see if we can, you know, pull out this upset. You know, no one was giving us a chance, so we had nothing to lose. We kind of left it all out there. And again, I thought we played a really good game.
Here's the last thought. I'm really struck by this because doing 3 or 4 times in this conversation, you've said, I hope this is the start of something great. So how do you go about building on the last few months as you get ready for next season? What's your process and plan?
Yeah, I'm already back down in Atlanta, you know, my hometown, and I'm back to training already. So again, you know, I kind of look back at everything that's happened, and I'm proud of myself, but again, you know, I don't want that to be the peak. I just want that to be the beginning. So hopefully, you know, there's a lot more games like that. a lot more opportunities, you know, and hopefully, you know, the main goal is to go win the Super Bowl. So, you know, whether it's me starting next year or someone else, that's the main goal. So, you know, that's where my mind's at right now.
Signed that 2-year contract with Washington last week, more than 350 yards from scrimmage and two TDs in that playoff game against Tampa Bay. Taylor Heinicke, our guest. Taylor, great to have you on the show. Really appreciate the conversation. Hope we can do it again next season. Thanks for the time. That was nice.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Taylor. Great job.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Rit. Taylor, my apologies, Taylor. Rit, you idiot. Dude, you have this guy, and he's a great story, and he's a great dude. He's going to think that I mocked him. Rit, you idiot. Rit, I cannot stress this enough, dude. I'm not even being funny. Do you understand that? I just didn't interview the guy. He's going to think I mocked him. Do not do that. Ever, Rit. I swear to God, if you do that again, you're fired. Do not do that after I talk to a guest. Damn, Rit. You idiot, Rit. Do you have any idea how hard it is to make these relationships and these connections? Dude, I'm not even kidding you on this one. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Pack your bleep up, Rit. We're close, convenient, and known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. See you tomorrow. We're out.